Yeah, and so welcome to Remembrance Listening Session. Today is October 28th. This is the 4 o'clock session, and we're here with Bill. So to start this session, we're going to use a little PowerPoint to sort of guide us. And and first and foremost, before we even do our introductions, we have to make sure, Bill, you know we're recording this session. And do we have your permission to record?
Yes, indeed.
Perfect. We may plan to use some actual footage from this session for the project in some way in the future. Do we have your permission for that as well?
Absolutely.
Okay, and one last question. Did you get a chance to complete your anonymous demographic form?
I did.
Perfect, okay. So we'll go ahead with introductions. We'll tell you a little bit about the program, and then we'll give you some parameters about, you know, some of the things he wants you to share, and then we'll give you like 12 minutes to share a memory about whoever the person is, and then we have a couple of program questions we need to ask you before we end.
Got it.
And then I will send you a link, a thank you note, and a link where you can receive a very small donation. I wish it was more, because this turns out to be a lot of emotional labor for a lot of people. But we'll send you the link for the compensation form.
Okay. Yeah.
So our introductions are going to go like this. We're going to say our names, where we're geographically located, our pronouns, communities we identify with, and maybe even one lesson that we've learned from COVID outbreak. So I'm Wahida. I am located in Philadelphia, in West Philadelphia. My pronouns are she, her, and beautiful. Communities I identify with are people living with HIV, LGBT communities, communities of faith, formerly incarcerated people, people who use drugs. One lesson that I've learned from COVID is how much we really need to depend on one another to survive. And so I've learned that it really does take a village to get through this COVID outbreak. So I'll pass it on. And Eddie, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Eddie. My geographical location is in the Winfield section of Philadelphia. My pronouns is he and him. Communities I identify as formerly incarcerated, LGBT, recovering people, and also older folks, and the one lesson I learned from COVID, man, I can't say it's just one lesson because I've learned more than one. It's like a wake up call, you know, not to put religion on anybody, but. You know, I'm a Christian, and they say these days will come. You know, and it has the government, it has the whole world baffled. It has them baffled. You know what I mean? And they said it's coming, man. When they gonna be lost for words, they gonna be able to do nothing about it, man. You know, so hopefully, you know, people just have some adherence. And pay attention to what's going on with them. You know what I mean? You know, teach the young people, man, because the young people is the ones that spread it. You know, I work with young adults, so I know I got to tell them every day to put their mask on. Don't come out here with no mask on, because I'm going to shut you down. You know what I mean? You know?
Excellent.
So, but yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Eddie. Yeah.
So my name is Bill, and I live kind of right at the edge of the gayborhood. That's where I am right now. And my preferred pronouns are he and him. And his. What was the other
communities you identify with and one lesson learned from COVID outbreak?
All right, it's right there on the screen. Sorry. Communities I identify with. Identify with as a creative, and with a communities of creative people. Identify with the queer community. Identify as anti-racist and as a feminist, and try to seek out those communities, and definitely feel a part of them, at least virtually these days. And speaking of that, I guess the lesson, I feel like my big lesson from COVID has been how much I love my friends and how much I miss them. I mean, I have been, you know, seeing some friends just like in little tiny groups. We'll meet on Kamak Street, or, you know, I'll meet my friends online or whatever, but it isn't the same at all. And I've just been reminded what social creatures humans are, and like, how much I've depended on those kinds of connections just to feel human, normal, and, you know, and able to get by. So I miss my connections with my friends, honestly.
Thank you so much, Bill. You shared a lot. I feel like I know you very well. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so, just getting started, Wahida.
Great. So we're going to let Eddie tell you a little bit about what Remembrance is. And then we'll move from there.
Maybe I better put my glasses on so I can actually read the screen. How about that?
Yeah.
All right. You ready?
Mm-hmm. Ready. Hey.
So, Remembrance. Whoa, what happened?
Did something happen?
Yes, it just disappeared.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, let me stop sharing and start sharing again. Let's see what happens here. Can you see it?
Nope. Funny is that I can hear you.
Okay, that's
too bad. Oh, let me do this again. I don't get it.
Yeah, I can see the screen. I can see the screen, and I can see Eddie in the corner of the screen.
Yeah. Wow.
I can see you too, Ed. I'm gonna go ahead and start.
I can't see you guys.
Really? Well, you wanna go and sign back in? Come on and sign back in.
That's what I'm gonna have to do, I think.
Okay. We'll go ahead and get started. I'll let you back in.
Okay. All right, cool. All right.
So we'll just go ahead and get started. Remembrance, what is it? Remembrance will be a memorial to Philadelphia and the HIV/AIDS crisis enacted through civic and theater performances and oral histories. It's a project of William Way LGBT Community Center and its John Wilcox Jr. Archives in partnership with artists, activists, and community leaders. There are several components. There are a number of components. Let me let Eddie back in. There are a number of components to Remembrance. Hi.
I'm back.
All right. Can you see the slide?
Yeah, you want me to finish?
Yeah, why don't you do this slide?
Okay, there are numerous components to Remembrance. One of the components of Remembrance is a community listening tour, which we are doing now, to gather untold accounts of community members who are now deceased. Oh, come on.
Community members who are now deceased but had lived with HIV, who may have passed either unnoticed or uncelebrated. The collected stories we gathered today will be added to the John Wilcox Jr.'s archives. Also, there's going to be a dedicated portal on the William Way LGBT website. And the input we receive from community members will be vital to shaping a memorial to HIV and AIDS in the city of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you can't see the screen.
I got it now, baby. I'm back.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and continue. So there's a team. We do this as a team. We have a program coordinator who's Chris Bartlett, the executive director of the William Way. The grant writer is actually from the William Way. The faith leader is from Philadelphia Fight. Community engagement coordinator, that's me. I also work at Philadelphia Fight. We have about at least three facilitators. Eddie is one. We have a woman of trans experience, and we have a young gay white man who's another facilitator. There's an artist to this project, and there's also a playwright. So in about we've been doing this now since May. So sometime, I guess around June, we'll start getting remnants. We'll start seeing what the play is going to look like. But everybody who makes the contribution is going to be invited to opening day of this big, it's going to be a real big production.
Excellent.
Yeah. And so we want to see if you have any questions before we keep going, Bill.
No, makes sense.
Okay. So here are the parameters. Eddie's going to be timekeeper. I guess when you get to around 12 minutes, Eddie might give you, like, put two fingers up or snap. You're going to snap at him? Okay, he's going to snap at you. All right. Okay. But what we want you to do is tell us what you want the world to remember about this person. We want you to talk about their struggles, their hobbies, what they liked, their family dynamics, and any stigma that they face because of their diagnosis, and talk about their resourcefulness, their resilience as well. If this person you're sharing about wasn't open with their HIV status, feel free to give them a pet name. Feel free to give them a nickname. What we want is the story, the remembrance of this person. So we're going to go ahead and allow you to talk, and we're going to let you talk for about 12 minutes. We may have some probing questions afterwards. But just tell us to start off with, Bill, who did you want to talk about today?
My friend Hunter.
Hunter?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about Hunter.
Wow. I just felt like this, like, sadness just saying his name out loud to you. I wasn't expecting that. I haven't thought about Hunter that much in the last few years. So it's good to think about him again. He was very, very young. I met him probably in 1989. And I was in my 20s. And he was in his late teens. He was 18 or 19. Mm. And he worked at TLA Video, which was my local video store. And I got to know him by going in there, and we would chat and flirt every time I went in. And it was like, you know, one of those perfect kind of like professional friendships, in that he would give me ideas about movies to rent, and he got to know what movies I like, and he would start saving them for me. And when I come in, he would be like, oh, I can't wait to show you this movie or tell you about this movie. And then eventually I was, like, recommending movies for him and movies for him to buy for the store, to recommend to the manager to buy for the store. And I was always super nervous about going into the porn section, like the gay porn section. I was always so freaked out about doing that. And having him there made me feel like we would make a joke about it, and he would make me at ease about it. Not that I went in there very often or anything, but, you know, like, when I would, he was very cool about it and made me feel comfortable. Anyway, eventually we took the friendship beyond the store, and we'd hang out and we'd talk movies. And then one day he just disappeared from the store. And he was, you know, he just wasn't there anymore. And I had his phone number and he wasn't answering my calls. And, you know, it was before cell phones. So, I can't remember if I'd get an answering machine or whatever, but I couldn't get in touch with him. Like I lost contact with him. And, eventually I thought, you know, I asked people at the store and they would be like, you know, it's private, you know, we can't like give out information about our employees. And eventually I found out from someone else who had befriended him that at the store that he had become sick and he was at his mom's and she had prevented him from being in contact with any of his friends. She didn't want him. She was super ashamed of his illness and she didn't want him to be in contact with any of his queer friends anymore. Eventually I did find his phone number and I called him at his mom's house and talked to him once right before he died. And his voice was, you know, super soft. We talked about movies and, I think I cried a bunch on the phone and he did too. And that was the last time I talked with him. And his mother, you know, wouldn't invite any of us to his service. I don't know if he even had one. And it was just this really bizarre experience of having someone just, because of all the shame around HIV, just kind of like disappear from the universe. And he was like trapped in his mother's house. And she was ostensibly taking care of him in the last few weeks of his life. But it resonated with me really profoundly. And, it makes me really sad to this day. I miss him. I miss talking about movies. And I don't think I went in TLA video for like a year after that or two because I couldn't go in. I missed him. So this person wasn't even that close of a friend and it had such a huge effect on me. There are other people that were closer to me that did die, but for me, he's always represented, you know, just the like, the sheer numbers of people that just kind of disappeared with AIDS and HIV and that the world, you know, will never get to know and lost.
That's why we have this, that's why we have these listening tours.
Yeah.
Because we want to capture, we don't want the world to, every life is valuable. Can I ask you a couple of questions about Hunter? First of all, let me ask you, is the LA video, is it still around? Was it a bookstore? Was it a video store? Is it still around?
It's not anymore. It existed until maybe 5 years ago, but it was a giant video store at 15th and Locust.
Oh, okay.
And, eventually it went the way of all video stores. I think they now, TLA Video now is a distributor of queer films.
Okay. Did Hunter have any partners that you knew about?
No.
Okay. And what did he like besides movies? What did you guys talk about besides movies? Did he like to dance? Did he like music? Could he sing?
He was a very, very cool, sexy dresser.
Okay.
I remember that about him. I was such a frumpy, like, little preppy dresser at the time, and I was like, ooh, I want to grow up to dress like you, even though he was 10 years younger than I was.
Mm-hmm. What was his race?
He was Latino.
He was Latino, okay. Now, you wouldn't have told, you never told us that, but that's fine. That's good to know. Particularly, like, we want to make sure that we capture Latino community as a part of these stories. So
he was.
So can I assume that they were Catholic? That his mom was Catholic?
Yeah.
Okay. And she wasn't having. Let me say some of the things that I heard you say so far about Hunter. I heard you say he was very, very young.
Yeah, he was 19 when he died.
You had the perfect professional friendship. He was really cool and made you at ease when you wanted to go into the porn section of the bookstore. He liked to talk about movies. All of a sudden, he disappeared. You couldn't get any calls in. Eventually, you was told that he was sick. What were you told when they told you he was sick? Of course, they told you he had AIDS. And so you all talked about him having AIDS or HIV?
He and I talked about it. Yeah. I mean, when I was told that he was sick, I honestly don't remember who told me that he was sick, but I was told that he had AIDS. Yeah. And wow. HIV. And I don't know if I knew that he was HIV positive. I don't remember if I did before he got sick. I knew after he disappeared, I suspected that, that's not the right word. I imagined that he might have gotten sick. I worried that he might be sick. Okay. That's the right word. And it turned out to be true. I mean, because at the time, you know, this is 1989, right? So we were all walking around thinking at any moment that we could get sick. And so, you know, if a gay friend disappeared suddenly, I mean, that was just, it was logical to assume that they had gotten sick.
Do you have any pictures of him?
I don't.
You mentioned that you said you didn't go to his funeral or memorial. Do you know if he had a funeral or a memorial? Do you know which one he had?
I don't even know if he did. I think his mother just cut all of his friends off. I don't know if, you know, I'm assuming he had a Catholic funeral. I have no idea.
Yeah.
She didn't want to have anything to do with us. Yeah. We had to sneak around to talk.
Yeah. You said he was trapped in his mother's house.
She was keeping him away from everybody.
People he wanted to communicate with and hang and be around. I'm so sure. That must have been very hard for him.
Yeah. I mean, and I remember feeling really frustrated and helpless about not seeing him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I honestly don't remember if that was because, I mean, I remember that he lived in New Jersey, like over the bridge somewhere. And I don't know if I didn't see him. Like, I don't know if I could have snuck in there and said hey to him. I don't know if I had the courage to do that. I don't even know if I did. Mm-hmm. I know that I wanted to talk with him, but I was, you know, I was so freaked out about AIDS and HIV at the time. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I went out of my way to try to see him. I don't remember.
Yeah. Do you know if he went to school for anything?
I'm still here. Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, he was in film school, I think at Temple. At Temple.
Great. Did he drive a car?
I don't think so.
Okay. Eddie, did you have any questions to ask? I've just been fired by him. I've just been rapid firing questions at Bill.
I mean, you know, I just want one question I have to ask, right? It's just kind of funny. But remember the part when you was talking about you hated to go into the
gay section. Porn section.
The porn section, yeah. The gay porn section.
It kind of reminded me of this Kevin Hart movie when he talked about how he was out of town for a while doing a movie, and he went into this X-rated thing out, and then he felt bad because he came out with the black bag looking like
a little black bag. I remember the little black bag.
Yeah, and totally. It kind of reminded me because I'm the same way. When I used to go into the thing, like, I haven't bought movies in like 15 years, but I'm saying when I did.
That's a lie. But go ahead. That's my husband you're talking to. That's a lie.
So look, I used to walk out with the black bag, right? And I used to be looking around, seeing if I see anybody out there.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
That was funny when you said that part. That just kind of.
That's why you laughed so hard.
It's funny. Yeah. It's funny because, I mean, it was like, it felt like it was a double stigma at the time.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, right.
It was not just, porn is much more commonly talked about now than it was then.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, everybody knows that everybody watches porn online now, right? So you might as well just talk about it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, so it's not really, I don't know, but that was what, over 30 years ago now?
Yeah.
Or about 30 years ago.
Wow.
And it was just like, there was a little bit of a stigma. There was, of going into getting porn. It was like behind a black curtain and everything.
Yeah.
And then it was like, it was going into the gay porn section. Oh boy, like sin upon sin.
Right.
And and he did always, he was like, I'll watch the front door when you go in there.
So I can see why he said he was just such a cool person. He said he was really cool. He made you feel at ease.
Yeah, he sounded like he was a real cool guy.
Yeah, something like he was.
He was lovely. He was just lovely. I mean, what I haven't said is that he was absolutely beautiful. Mm. I remember that as a physical thing. But I also, I just remember being like just kind of like delighting in his presence. Like he was just charming. He had everything, right? He had everything. He was beautiful, he was really smart, he was funny, he made me at ease. I think I had a giant crush on him, but he was like a teenager and I was like 29. So, I mean, I never really thought of him as a date, really. Even though I think he had a big crush on me.
Yeah.
He had a big crush on me. That was the other thing. And I loved that he had a big crush on me. Like I was super flattered by that. I think through the age, I don't know, at that time, the age difference really mattered. I don't know. It's a lot of different, even though it was only 10 years, that's a pretty big difference in life experience, the difference between 29 and 19.
Yeah. And those days, I think it was. I don't think so much today. So what
I would like go out with a 19-year-old now, but I wouldn't when I was 29.
Right. Okay. So I was going to ask you, what was the one thing you wanted the world to, if you had one thing to say, what would you want the world to remember about Hunter? But you just said a lot of things. You just said he was charming. He was beautiful. He was smart. He was funny. You said he was everything. You already told me.
It was this extraordinary sense of loss, like, oh my God, this incredibly amazing person only made it to 19.
Only made it to 19. Yeah.
It was, the definition of a tragedy in my mind.
Yeah. Well, Bill, listen, we're going to be stewards of this story and make sure that it gets to the archives and it becomes a part of this entire remembrance project. We're going to switch gears, if that's okay. Are you okay?
I am okay. Yeah. I'm sad, but that's okay.
Okay. We're going to switch gears. We just have a few questions to ask you before we close out.
Sure.
But we just want to just thank you really for just bringing Hunter to this project, to remembrance. And we just have a few questions to ask you and everybody. We ask everybody these programmatic questions before we end the session. Ed, can you see the screen?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Okay, a few questions we have for you. Do you remember when you first heard of HIV and AIDS, and what was that like?
Well, I was in college, and I was part of a little, like, you know, we were these, like, little, like, baby gays. you know, I was, like, 18 or 19 in college. I guess HIV really came on the scene in about 1983. Is that right? That's about right, right? 82, 83, into public consciousness.
Okay.
And I was in college, and I remember, like, there was a guy, there was a counselor at college who was in charge of helping the queer students, and he talked to us about it, and he, you know, talked to us constantly about safer sex, and so it was part of my coming out process. I came out into the world of HIV and AIDS as a young gay man. So I don't ever remember being identified as gay without AIDS being there.
Wow.
And it was before anybody knew really how it was transmitted or what the implications were. So, you know, it meant, you know, like, sex was scary always. You know, when I was coming out, it was just like, you know, yeah, you get to have sex now, but you also, you know, might get to die.
Yeah. Okay, so the next question is, do you remember the first funeral or memorial service that you ever attended for someone who died from HIV? Can you describe that?
Yeah, it was for my friend Steven, and it was at St. Joe's Catholic, or Old St. Joe's in the city. And at the time, I think Old St. Joe's was one of the very few churches that was having funerals for people that had died of HIV. Mm-hmm. So everyone was grateful to the priest. And this priest was, like, known as a good priest. Mm-hmm. but I still remember from the sermon that he was like, he talked about how Stephen had gone to bathhouses and probably contracted AIDS through going to bathhouses. I mean, it seems like a weird thing for a priest to be talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, I remember his basically saying that Stephen regretted the actions that he did that gave him AIDS. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I took away from it. Like, you know, Stephen was a wonderful person. We're sad he's dead, and he made a lot of mistakes, and that's how he got AIDS. And that's why he had AIDS.
So was that a funeral or a memorial? Was Stephen's body actually there? Do you remember if that was?
I think it must have been. I think it must have been a memorial. I certainly didn't see Stephen's body. Mm-hmm. I know I didn't see it. So
okay. Ed, you want to take the next question?
Has the current COVID-19?
No, the other one before that.
Oh, I thought you were talking about that. How would you memorialize those lost to AIDS in Philadelphia? What would a proper AIDS memorial look like to you?
By the way, sorry, it just occurred to me, Hunter was also Native American. He was Latino and also Native American.
Okay. Great, okay.
Part of what made him so freaking beautiful. Anyway, how would I memorialize? You know, you guys are doing such an amazing job. I love the idea of doing performance. I love the idea of doing a vigil, of doing a march, of, you know, there being a, you know, movement and a chance for all of us to not just sit down, but us to, like, take walks together. I really, really, I mean, I've heard that that's part of it, and I think it's great. I'm really looking forward to seeing the performances. I don't know what visually, I don't know what a memorial should look like other than that, you know, I'd love to see people's names. Because it is about these, like, each, you know, Hunter is just one dude that died among, like, you know, millions, right? Yeah. And he was 19 and he never got to live this life, you know, that he could be living right now as my friend, you know, talking about movies and, you know, whatever. He never got to experience Netflix with me and stuff like that. And so just like, anything that can really remember that these people were individuals, these are not just stats, right?
Would you like to see it outside? Would it be inside? Would it be something that was stably, or would it be something that moved around?
It makes sense to me that it would be outside. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of it moving around.
Okay. Something moved with movement and outside.
I mean, I thought the quilt was great. I'm sure that comes up a lot. I mean, yeah. it is the most perfect memorial ever. And you know, that was obviously kind of, you know, moved around. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of it being, you know, in a park, where I could go whenever I wanted. You know, I could go take my lunch and have lunch with Hunter, or, you know, my other friends that, you know, that are gone. And, you know, there's also, you know, the other, you know, I'm sure you could tell from the story that, you know, it was pretty traumatizing. It was very traumatizing to come out in the age of AIDS.
Yeah.
And I feel like part of what I memorialize is, mm-hmm. like a sense of safety, which I never got to have in my gay youth. Okay. So I still struggle with that grief, with feeling like, you know, I never got to have sex without being terrified of it when I was in my 20s. And, you know, it still very, very much affects me. And I know it affects other, you know, guys my age, of course, and older and even younger. So that's part of the memorialization for me, is memorializing like my lost youth as someone that, you know, that, you know, feeling of safety. Along with the lives that were lost, I would like a place where I could go and just try and move through recovering from that, which has been a lifelong process. Yes.
Great. Thank you for that. We've gotten so many types of ideas about the memorial. We do plan to ask Pew Foundation for more money to actually make this memorial come to life.
Yeah,
so that is our plan. So we want to go with all these ideas, and thank you so much. The last question that we have for you is comparing the current COVID-19 health crisis. Does it brought back any memories to you of the early days? HIV, and what is that like for you?
You know, it hasn't really compared to me with me. You know, maybe the first few weeks when none of us really knew exactly how it was transmitted, and like, you know, afraid, you know, every time you go to the grocery store, you're afraid, you know, like that kind of fear with COVID only lasted a couple of weeks. And then, you know, and then it was pretty clear how you could avoid it and, mm-hmm. you know, how you could take care of yourself. With HIV, it was, you know, years and years and years of having no idea if, like, you know, the person you were kissing was giving you AIDS, or, you know, if you were, you know, accidentally shared a glass or something like that. You know, I mean, I'm here.
Yeah.
So it doesn't compare in terms of the depth of horror and grief in my own life. I mean, I haven't had anyone close to me die of COVID. I think I would feel differently if that were the case.
Wow. It totally makes sense. Thank you so much. We're just want to thank you for your open, honest sharing. And thank you for bringing Hunter to us. Thank you for adding the things you added on about him being a Native American as well as Latino with his beauty. You told us you didn't have any photos of him, and that's fine because you gave us a photo. You gave us a beautiful photo of him from the inside out. So we want to thank you for that. If you know anybody else that we need to be talking to, just spread the word and tell them, hey, this is a good thing to do. I have a list of emails I got from John and Darius. I got another list from Chris Bartlett. And so I'm reaching out to people. That's probably how you and I met. So if you know anybody that needs to... they may want to share a story, just drop me a line. I'll be happy to reach out to them. And so what happens now is that, I'm going to send you a link. I'll send you a thank you letter and a link for this conversation right after this session. And just want to just thank you so much, Bill. And
my pleasure, Wahida. My pleasure, Eddie. It was really great.
I speak to you, Bill.
It was a pleasure to meet you, Eddie. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for your hard work and doing it so thoughtfully.
It's a pleasure to have you. It's a pleasure to have you. It's a 2-year program. We've been doing this now since May. Originally, they were supposed to be done. These were supposed to be face to face.